So we have a really big birthday celebration to shout out here
Yeah,
this
we don't really
week.
need to make a big deal about that. Can I just say that?
No, we don't need to make a big deal about the birthday.
No, not at all. Like, birthdays happen. I don't understand what the big deal is. People get older.
Yeah, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Soccer Chat superfan Brandon Oglesby.
Oh, well, that makes more sense because he's a lot closer to like a big number like 50 than I am.
Soccer chat with two T's because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga, so it's like a play on words. And Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Was that harsh?
I mean,
Too harsh?
that is what you're known for, so I don't think anyone's going to be taken aback.
Well, I don't know. People were taken aback by my harshness of the fancy seats in the last podcast. So maybe they don't realize that I'm an idiot like they should.
So welcome to Soccer Chat. Alex and Adam are here. Wolfman Jeff is on the road, out of town, getting to visit family. As much as we know, we're going to miss him. We're excited he gets to go spend some time with his daughter. Hope he has a wonderful trip. We love you, Wolfman. I want to start the show with a brief rant, and I don't want to get bogged down in it because it's not. I think there's a lot of positives to take away from the game, but there's this one thing that drove me nuts. It has to do with the trash broadcasting by USL League One. So, for folks that didn't watch the game, it was a very exciting finish. Madison scored a goal, drew the game level in stoppage time. And shortly after that kickoff, the Red Wolves came down. A cross goes in the box, a glancing header by Juan Galíndez. It's in the goal. I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, excited. Probably woke up the neighbors. And then we're told that it's taken off the board because of offside. And I'm waiting for a replay to see what happened. This huge controversial play. All those football games you watch where there's like a big fumble or interception that completely changes the outcome of the game, and then the referees get together and decide that it wasn't an interception or a fumble, and the football game just moves on with the next play from scrimmage, and no one even talks about the fact that maybe it was controversial or it might have been a close call or this was a big deal. Let's see what happened on that play. We go to the final whistle. Nothing happens. No replay is shown. It's terrible broadcasting. It's bad enough we have to keep listening to announcers that sound like they're trying to call the puppy bowl and have absolutely no excitement in their voice and no connection to what's happening to the game and no ability to rise to a big moment. And then something like this happens. The same thing happened in the game last year, the Justice for Jono, where he heads a goal in to give us a lead that would have won the game for us, would have allowed us to have to host a semifinal game. And all of a sudden, Madison's taking a free kick, and the announcer is confused about what the call is. And at no point does anyone think, well, if the announcer's confused, the people who pay money to ESPN to watch these stupid games might be confused as well. Maybe we should show a replay of the play and try to figure out what happened. It's ridiculous. It's not fair to the fans, the people that are paying money to try to support your league and give you a job putting this on. Show a replay.
So
That's
I'm
all I
gonna.
got to say. I'm willing to accept that it's off, that he was offside on the play. Camera angles on these TV broadcasts, even if he looked close, are not really a good thing to judge.
Yeah,
But that just
it's a
bothered me that I
two-camera.
had to rewind my own broadcast in order to figure out what the heck happened.
Yeah, and I think we both did the same thing on that. We both rewound. I rewound and was like, "Yeah, he's offsides." And I don't think it was that close, but he seemed to think it was, and he
It
posted
was a
a.
lot closer than the goal he scored against Ofik Antman.
Yeah, Yeah, I'll give you that. I will also say it was a lot closer than Madison's first goal in the midweek, where their guy was a good yard offsides and didn't have it called on him. And it was the first shot, it rebounded back, and the second shot went in. But the first shot, the guy was a good yard and a half offsides and didn't get called. And they also did not replay that one originally. I went back and watched. Like, the replay cuts to where, like, he's already got the ball. So if you rewind and look at the actual play, it's like, oh, wait a second. Here's what really happened. The guy's a yard and a half offsides when the ball's kicked, and you didn't call it, which was weird because usually they really struggle with that. Usually they wait until he receives, like, oh, he's 3 yards past him. Like, well, yeah, but it's when it kicked. Like, usually they struggle the other direction, and they didn't. This time they just completely missed it both directions because he was offsides when the ball's kicked, and he was offsides when the ball was received. So they just sucked, period. But I don't think that was the case here. I think it was a right call. I agree with you. It's a miss. And I think the bigger miss for me is the second half of your rant, which is how they don't get excited at games. And the reason they don't get excited is these are all centralized down in Florida. They're all sitting in, like, you know, a cubicle somewhere calling the game off the same feed we've got. So half the time they're not watching the game because we're not watching the game. Like, how often, I don't know how often I'm yelling at the TV saying, can I watch the game now? Where they're, like, zoomed in on, like, some random, like, person, and the ball is on the other side of the field. Like, we missed an entire corner kick one game because they were so focused on one end of the field and down there. They didn't even show us the corner kick. And everybody on the, you know, fan Slack was like, wait, didn't we have a corner? And you had to go, like, listen to the commentary to realize, oh, there was a corner that happened there. They just didn't show it. Like, what? So, yeah, they got bad camera angles. But the bigger thing is they're sitting in a cubicle. And, you know, they talk about this. It's going to be a really weird analogy, but they talk about this on the disconnect that the military has with drone strikes and how it feels like they're in a video game and they don't have that real life connection to a drone strike. And the worry that the military talks about making decisions without having that, is that an advantage or a disadvantage? I can tell you from watching ESPN Plus broadcast of USL, it's a disadvantage. Having no emotional connection to what's happening makes you sound like a robot. And I don't think that's a good thing.
Well, again, and it, you know, the sound feeds are terrible. You watch some of these games and it sounds like the entire stadium is on mute.
The opposite.
Kind
right?
of surprised. It used to be, it sounded like they handed out lapel mics to everyone in the flock for Madison games. This particular game was incredibly, again, muffled and muted. It was hard to hear the stadium and what's going on. And now I'm not asking for every guy on every kick of the ball to be like Gus Johnson from, you know, Fox College Football. But when these big plays happen, because it's like they're trying to do kind of an NPR voice as they're doing play by play, they can't rise to a big moment. You know, there is a way to give genuine excitement in your voice when a big play happens without being like over the top, screaming.
How much do you think it is because they're doing a one person broadcast?
Because I think that also is a huge disadvantage. And I want to give respect to some of these guys because they're having to talk through the entire game. I think part of the problem, you know, there's a particular broadcaster that we greatly dislike because he focuses a whole lot more on trying to do commentary than play by play when he's doing the games, and his commentary is god awful. And he should stick to play by play, which he's barely mediocre at. But yeah, it's hard when you're having to do all of that and analyze it and break it down and do the reads. And when you watch any other sport, you've got a two-man booth. It's a lot easier to probably organize your thoughts, to catch a breath, to be able to hit that occasion when a big play happens, because you were able to lay out for a couple, 30 seconds for someone to bring in some analysis while you take a sip of water.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, so that was fun. My phone just overheated. It went into emergency, you're overheated. So I turned the AC on in the car. Apparently, I didn't realize it was overheating before my phone did. All right. And so North Carolina FC actually has a two-man booth, and you can tell the difference. When we go to an away game at NCFC, It's way, way better. Like, they're, I think they're on site to begin with, but also there's two of them and you can hear them playing off each other. And I strongly suggest future teams do the same thing. It doesn't have to be the Soccer Chat guys that do this for Chattanooga, but find somebody to do this, you know, whether it's, you know, some local ESPN radio guys, whether it's someone on, you know, another blog or something like that. I don't really care, but get somebody out there to do this for us. It can't be, if NCFC, who gets way less fans than we do at their games, can afford to do it, I would love for us to do it as well.
I nominate Stephen Beatty as the analyst. We would have a lot of fun listening to that Irish brogue.
Oh, good stuff.
So let's turn to the game. And like you said, I think we disagree in that I think the offside call was a little closer than you think, but I do think it was a good call. And the point of the rant was less about whether the offside call was good and about the fact that when a huge game-changing play happens, you show the freaking replay. But that wasn't Juan Galindez's only time to shine. So we start the game. It's very rainy. Both teams are playing kind of cagey. A long ball goes towards the Madison goalkeeper, which was the backup. Or I don't know if they have, if their regular Philip Brino is the one that we've seen the last couple of years. I don't know if he was injured or if they just decided to rotate. But there's a miscommunication between the center back and the goalkeeper. And Juan Galindez is able to pounce on that ball and put it in. What did you think about the goal and where Red Wolves were sitting when they took that 1-0 lead?
It's the second time that that goalkeeper messed up, and it's he just didn't get caught the first time. That was bad goalkeeping.
Yeah,
and he messed up earlier where it was that play where he and his player came together near the goalpost, right?
Right.
And it was bad. Like great. I'm so glad that we have pulled that off, you know, with Phil Brino now being with the Tampa Bay Rowdies. It makes me happy that we didn't have to face him, because I feel like Brino's a whole lot better, and that's probably why he got, you know, sent on to them. But yeah, it was bad goalkeeping. And if that's the goalkeeper they have the rest of the year, they're not making the playoffs. That's kind of my view on it. So great that we finished it, but pretty sure every one of our forwards, every one of them, would have finished that goal.
I think you're right, but I do think there is a fair amount of diggity to the goal if we go to our scale from last week, in that it's at a bit of an angle, and on that slick turf, he had to make sure he hit it with enough power to keep anyone from being able to do a goal line save, try to kick it back over their head or anything like that, and make sure that it gets over the line. I think we have lots of talented forwards who are able to do that and would have done it. But I do want to give him credit for that. We go back to the play you're talking about where I think it was off of a corner that the keeper misplayed, that his player put himself into the goalpost to block the ball. Juan Galindez had his arms out celebrating before that ball was over the line. If he had pounced quicker, he might have been able to poke that in and give us the 1-goal lead on that play.
So the reason I brought that up is I did not like Juan. I do not want Juan starting.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. I don't think that's good use of him. I think, and I'm going to get to this a little bit later when I talk about something that I realized earlier in the week when I was looking at how many points we've lost in extra time. I think he hurts us when we have a lead because he has no ability to track back. He doesn't have the speed. And I think you need him to have more legs that he doesn't have. He lasts about 60 minutes and then his legs get out. And I don't understand why we keep starting him when the type of player he is going to succeed at a much higher rate when everybody else's legs are tired. Like, you're more likely to have set pieces. The stats show this, that you have more set pieces in the second half. You have a lot more possession style play than breakaway plays in a second half. That's what his build builds for. He is a big guy, takes up space. I don't like him starting. So that's why I brought up anyone could have done that, because yeah, he got the goal, but everyone would have gotten that goal, in my opinion. That's on our team. I wouldn't mind Rafa doing that. I think Tejea is going to get that. I can't think of anyone that I would think, yeah, I'd rather have Juan doing that. Cause for two reasons. One, I was worried Juan was going to get caught from behind. I don't think I have to worry about Rafa getting to that ball before the defender and the keeper after they ran into each other. Like, I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at. Now, that said, because of the style he plays, maybe he's only he's there because he's the only one that would have been that far forward. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. I mean, he is one of the leading scorers in USL League One this year, but I just really feel like he's a better suited to be a sub, and I'm a little frustrated that we're not seeing that change.
Yeah, or, you know, you talk about he's good for about 60 minutes, so after the 60th minute, why are we not? And I wonder if that plan had to change because, of course, in the first half here, again, we had to spend a sub on a goalkeeper where Tor Saunders, it looked like he had tried to come off of his line, and because of the turf being very, very wet, it looked like his knee maybe had locked up. I have not been able to get an update on where he is, how he feels, but we had Carlos Aviles had to come off the bench, much like Tor did in Fuego, and try to keep things clean. And I think it was very similar in that Madison was chasing the ball. There wasn't a whole lot for Carlos to have to do until later in the second half. How did you feel about how Red Wolves played after they got that first goal?
They've done what they've done in a lot of these other games, which statistically speaking, and this I'm just going to go ahead and go into it, isn't working. We have lost 7 points in extra time. Seven.
Right.
That's not a small number for the 21 games. If you're losing 0.3 points per game in extra time, you've got a problem. We'd be in first if we hadn't been doing that. We've lost 3 wins and a tie in that span in extra time. And it's, in my opinion, completely and totally related to this whole idea that our team is built to shut down when we get a lead. We need to expand leads, not shut down. It can't be, we got our one goal, we're going to sit back. This team's not built for that. Even though I'm very happy with Timmy Mel and Daniel Navarro in the back, I don't want them to have to defend for 60 minutes. An onslaught. I don't think we're built for that. And you see it with the Galindres goal that wasn't, right? Within 3 minutes, we're scoring an offsides goal that is within, you know, a foot and a half of being an onside goal. And we had not a sniff of anything before that. And it says to me, it's not like Madison's going to shut down at home and just play for the tie.
Yeah, so I feel like when they were playing, you know, playing to possess the ball, there was a comfort on the ball, some good passing in between the lines. But I agree with you that it's all in our end. And we've seen that really, really since the win that we had against North Carolina. We were able to jump out to a 2-0 lead. And basically in the first half, we were kind of shutting things down and have played that very cagey style. And there's been plenty of games where the second goal hasn't come. And it's exactly what you said. It's the game in Omaha. If not for a badly taken penalty, we'd have had the same situation in Fuego, in Fresno against Fuego. And then again here with Madison, you know, when we were able we got lucky. I don't want to say got lucky, but it worked out for us well in that we got a second interception and were able to go through transition and score a second goal against Greenville. And if not, that game would have ended up 1-1, would have been a pretty tight nail biter. Greenville might have had a lot more confidence until Mo Espinoza slammed that door in the second half. So that's one of the few games that's kind of an outlier of what you're talking about in that we don't go for the second goal. And you've seen it from the beginning of the year. where other teams have scored first and almost immediately off the kickoff. I think back to the game that we played against Tucson in April, where both times that Tucson scored, we were scoring on them immediately after the kickoff.
Yeah,
we did that in the home game against Fuego, where they scored and right before halftime and took a 2-1 lead in like literally the play off the kickoff leads to a penalty that Juan Galindres finished. So,
well, and think even the Northern Colorado 4-1 victory at home.
Right.
They scored first and we immediately answer and we kept the gas going.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that if you look at those 4-1, the 5-1, the 7-1, those games, we stayed on the gas. I don't understand. Like those were not games where we're like, maybe you could say the victory versus Greenville, we did sit back a little bit, right? And right. We didn't really turn it on until that. But the other ones, we kept it on the, like, we weren't sitting back. Like, it weren't like a counter fluke type thing. And that's what I just don't get. Like, it's worked to be, continue to press them. It's how your team's built. It's, and I know Oblate is not around because he's in, super secret triple probation, never going to tell anyone what's going on. USL sucks at this stuff, world, but this is Oblate's style that he claims is supposed to be aggressive all the time. And I haven't seen it in 2.5 years.
Yeah. Well, and especially this season, I feel like as we went through that period where we had 2-3 game losing streaks, that we became very pragmatic because we're trying to battle our way back up the table. But I don't know that it's going to completely work doing it this way. We've got to let the guys go because we need wins. We're not going to get back into playoff contention tying our final 9 games. We've got to get probably 5 or 6 wins and really make sure that we've closed the door on that. Cause I don't necessarily want to back in at 6th place. I would much prefer that we find a way to battle up to 3rd or 4th. We're in 3rd right now, but I don't even think we're in 3rd.
Actually, we're in 4th.
Omaha already jumped over us. We're in 4th, but that's kind of, it's not completely legitimate because everyone behind us has games in hand. And if we're just getting ties, we're not helping our advantage there. We've got to get those wins.
And Omaha's got games in hand still. They're going to end up being in 1st when this is all said and done. If they continue playing like they're playing, I think you're going to look at us fighting Richmond for that 3rd and 4th spot. If we can get some wins, there's no one else on there. She should scare you at all. Like, those are the 4 good teams, us, Richmond, Greenville, and Omaha. Everybody else, it's not great. I mean, Tucson just got a win, and they're terrible. They beat us on one of those examples that I gave where we lost the tie, right?
Right.
But, like, if it wasn't for us, they wouldn't have had very many points at all because they've gotten so many from us. But they got a victory. Omaha got a victory yesterday because we're recording this on Thursday. Those actually went our way. When Omaha plays, whoever they're playing, as long as it's not Greenville or Richmond, then I want to tie. I want Omaha to just go ahead and win those games. I want Greenville to win their games. I want Richmond to win their games. I want to host the semifinal. I don't think we get top two. So at this point, I decided those are the 3 teams that are probably going to finish above us. Maybe Richmond, I'll root for ties. Everyone else, I want them to lose to them. I want Omaha to win it. I want Greenville to win their games because I fully expect that that's where they're going to be based off what I'm looking at. So that went our way. Like, Omaha winning that game versus Charlotte, that goes our way. Like, I want that to happen. Because now when I look at points per game, we are legitimately sitting in the 5th spot points per game. Points per game 2 weeks ago, we were sitting in 9th. So that's a good – we're moving in the right direction.
Right. We have 6 unbeaten. And so, like, we shouldn't be overwhelmingly negative. And like I said, there's a lot of comfort in the passing that I've seen. Guys are really – in my mind, guys are starting to understand each other well on the field. We've got a lot more depth of people who are going to be able to come off the bench and do well, guys that can rotate in. Jimmy Villalobos, I think, is, again, he had to be treated and subbed out for something that looked like it was with his knee, but I think he's going to be okay, maybe with a week off to rest and let it recuperate. Carrera Garcia, I think, had a fantastic game. Was all over that field, stringing passes together. It just never transitioned into the offensive end to put a lot of pressure on Madison. And I wonder if the wet field, if the field conditions, the raininess might have had something to do with it. But at this point in the season, again, we need the points. We need to win. We need to go for that second goal. And so that's, I think you have a important point when you look at the fact that these games late, you know, it's like a kind of cruel reversion to the mean. We were the, what was the thing
cardiac
about
Rebels.
The Lobos?
Cardiac Rebels.
Yeah, the Cardiac Red Wolves. Everything happening late in the season. Things, you know, unfortunately, a lot of that was salvaging ties instead of wins. And so we, again, weren't able to climb up the table and host a playoff game. And now we're at a point where when we need these late game things to come our way, they haven't been breaking our way.
So let's look towards this weekend. As you already mentioned, every game's kind of big. What are you expecting as we head into this game on Saturday?
I expect us to be flying. I think they're going to come out strong early. And what I think is important is, are they able to get that second goal? We had to play in the slop in the middle of the track field in Tormenta. They keep showing us pictures of how amazing their new field looks and the grass that's growing. My question is, does it drain? So they talked about it being the 26th different stadium to be played in the USL League One. And I think they're selling Northern Colorado short that they're not going to have a fourth stadium here before Tormenta opens theirs. But Tormenta doesn't scare me, even though we lost to them in that game, again, in really bad conditions where things were kind of a toss-up and it felt like we were a little out of our game. We'll have our home field advantage, and I think our guys will be flying, and the key to the game is going to be, can they get that second goal, either in the first half, early in the second, make it 2-0. If you've got Tormenta's back to the wall like that, then I think we're going to be pretty good for the rest of the match.
Yeah, you referenced the Tormenta Stadium, and I'm happy that they've got enough of the publics done to start working on the Tormenta Stadium. But can we not call it a stadium when it's just grass and one stand that's been temporarily set up on one end? Like, I'm sorry, like, it's not, it's, let me back up. I'm super excited that it's grass and not turf. I wish ours was. And they obviously had to put all the drainage and all the water system, all that stuff. I know there's a lot that goes into building out, but I don't understand why they're opening it this season. Like, it's two games and it's literally a field with a temporary stands. Like, it's like the stands that they had at CCS looking stands.
Right.
Like I don't get it. Like, just keep playing at Statesboro. Your 500 fans will be fine. I like how they're acting as if you better hurry up and buy tickets. We're going to sell out. No, you're not.
For the two temporary stands that seat 250 people, they'll sell out really fast.
Maybe. I don't know that they will.
It's different from our situation in that we had the 1-year contract with David Stanton Field. And that was going to be it. And that's part of why we had to move. And there was lots of COVID craziness involved as well. But that's kind of why we had to move into ours as early as it was. And as it's still getting built around, the field.
Yeah, there's something comical about somebody who's for 3 years been watching games in a construction site making fun of them for it. But there's a big difference between, because they like talked about all the state of the art things that are coming. And I know you got to push, you know, ramp it up and all that stuff, but it's not where you're at right now. Like I would not think twice about if they were to tell me that that was just a stadium that they put temporary stands up at Camp Jordan, it would look the same. Like, there's nothing about it that says to me, that's a state-of-the-art new stadium. And that's why I don't understand why they're making a big deal, because you have time. If you just skip those two games, play those other games there at Georgia Southern, and spend the offseason really making it look beautiful and make it a true grand opening of their stadium. Like, even our stadium, at least it was like a wraparound stadium seats.
Yeah,
that had been set up. Like, this is legitimately looks like a high school football temporary stands that have been set up because there was like construction issues at the real stadium. But anyways, on the actual game,
they'll just ride it home then.
Right. On the actual game that's coming up this weekend, it's got to be more of what we saw in the first half of these most recent games. It's got to be aggressive. It's got to be really taking it to them. And that's what's going to separate us and give us the advantage. If we sit back, I fear if we sit back and score a goal early and sit back again, we're setting ourselves up not for a late tie, but for a late loss. My apologies. I couldn't hear what you said. And Siri wants to talk to me in the background, so that's cool. If I don't see us really pressuring, I'm worried about what happens in this game. Because I think if you look, it's a team that we could blow out. And it's also a team that if we take the strategy we took versus Madison, could surprise us and get us with a late goal.
No, I think you're right. You look at the comeback that they had against Greenville. I think they had another one later against one of the other teams that they played. And so, yeah, it's the, you know, they've got attacking weapons. They've got decent defenders, but it is a team that if we play our best and if we play the aggressive style that we want to be known for, that we're going to be able to control this game, get the second, third, maybe even a fourth goal, and have a really fun night, which will be great because I'm going to be driving up from Peachtree City after my son's playing in a soccer tournament down in Atlanta.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm even making it to the game, to be honest with you, because I'm at that same tournament with our son, and I'm not sure how that's going to work because his game's a little later, if we're even going to be able to pull that off. So we may end up trying to catch somewhere that'll let us watch on ESPN Plus on, like, my Fire Stick or something. But
super fan Kay Baker bringing cheese curds to us back from Madison. I am not going to save any for you if you're not able to make it.
That's fair. That's fair. I'll give you that.
Any other thoughts about the Tormenta game?
I mean, the one thing I will come back to, you know, Tormenta's played one less game than us. They're 2 points behind us. I think we get this win, it puts us in a position where we're 5 points clear of them with them having a game in hand, which puts another team below us that just can't get to us if we take control. A tie does not accomplish the same thing. It gives them the chance to come up there and get to us. And it, one of the things that I want to bring up before we move on to non-League One type stuff is have you ever looked at the tiebreakers for League One on positions?
I would imagine it's illogical.
They're using wins again. Mm-hmm. Instead of whatever... really hate this thing sometimes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, you're back.
I don't know where
I imagine that the tiebreaker scenario is something completely illogical.
Yeah, so they're using wins. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, every other league uses goal differential if you're tied on points. And they're using wins, which is such an American thought process. To be like, well, wins are more important. Well, ties get you a point for a reason. It also means you have less losses. If you've got the same amount of points, but you have less wins, you also have less losses. So
right.
It's kind of one of those things that drives me nuts. Like, goal differential makes sense. And when you have this many teams vying for that position, you're going to have teams tied on points, and you're going to have a lot of confused fans going, wait, but we have a plus 11 goal differential. They have a negative 4. They have more wins than us, so they get in. That makes no sense. So, yay. Let's not let that be a thing. But that's the only thing I was going to say is, you know, we got to watch out for that because wins are important. And Tormenta's got one less win than us. So a tie actually puts us in a good position because even though I don't want a tie, it means that at the 21 game mark, we had one more win than they did. So it puts us in a position where they can only tie us on wins, assuming we both win out from that point forward. But which is a weird statement. But all that to say, even a tie is helpful, but a win really helps us solidify being in that, you know, 3-4 position.
Yeah, and I think it does a lot for the team confidence to be able to establish their dominance at home and get that win. So I think it's going to be very important. So moving along, local soccer, you know, it's that time of the fall where things are getting kicked off. Local high school football, local high school soccer, college soccer is getting started. And I am seeing that Tennessee Wesleyan, who sent out a thing about College ID Camp and tagged us on Twitter. So I don't know what your eligibility status is, Adam, but apparently they want us to come and try out for Tennessee Wesleyan. But their men begin Saturday playing down in Florida at Pensacola Christian, and the Tennessee Wesleyan ladies start on Saturday taking on local rival at Dalton State. So they'll be playing them. Also, right now, as we're recording, the UTC ladies, actually, they probably will kick off a little bit later tonight, but they're going to be playing today as we're recording against Alabama Birmingham. That's down in Birmingham. They shared a link to watch it on CUSA TV, which is Birmingham's home conference. I haven't looked to see if it's on ESPN Plus. There's a lot of college soccer, especially women's college soccer, that you can find on ESPN Plus. And the ladies are, the UTC's Lady Mocs are on there often. So check them out. But more importantly, Sunday, they are playing their home opener against Eastern Kentucky. It is at the UTC complex, which is at 499 O'Neill Street in Chattanooga. That's just behind Ingalls Stadium off of 3rd Street. So if you're a person that goes by landmarks instead of addresses, just behind Ingalls Stadium is the UTC Athletic Complex. Admission to the games is free. Bring a lawn chair because there's a few bleachers, but mostly it's kind of, you know, popping out a blanket or a lawn chair along the sideline, and you get to be up close and personal to the action. There are a lot of UTC ladies. Of course, there's Maggie Shaw, who was, I think she was the one on SportsCenter Top 10 with the Lady Red Wolves. And there are a couple other, at least one other UTC lady who played with the Lady Red Wolves over the summer, but lots of good young players there. The coach is part of the Chattanooga Red Wolves Academy. So give them some support, show up and cheer them on. They'll have lots of games, but this Sunday is the first one kicking that off at the UTC Athletic Complex.
Cool.
And finally, because Adam is traveling at the moment, or in his car anyway, not able to pull up the Biggleswade Report music, I do want to give a shout-out to our friends. Biggleswade United had a tie last Saturday, had a draw or a loss, played Sheffield Town in Campton. I'm really hoping that Campton has a ladies team, the Campton ladies soccer team. That's an American joke. People might not get that over in Biggleswade. But they had a draw and a loss. They'll be playing Saturday against London Colney. And Biggleswade Town, last Saturday, they played a 0-0 draw against Cheerinchester. That was their league kickoff. And then they had a close loss on Tuesday. They'll be playing their first FA Cup match this Saturday. They'll be hosting Witten United. And Biggleswade FC, unfortunately, had a loss over the weekend, but yesterday on Wednesday, they came from a goal down to win 2-1 against Waltham Abbey. They too will be starting their FA Cup journey, hosting Cambridge on Saturday. That is the Biggleswade Report.
So two things. Number one, your lack of trust in my ability to get the Biggleswade music put onto here is disappointing. And those that are watching on YouTube will be like, wait a second, what's he talking about? I not only hear the music, but I see the amazing Biggleswade Report screen happening. So that's going to be a thing. And two is, are they entering at the same level on the FA Cup that was unfortunate 4-0 loss for the other Biggleswade team last week?
So no, this is the preliminary round. So the round where Biggleswade United lost was the extra preliminary round.
Okay, so this is the next preliminary round. Gotcha. All right.
As anyone would know.
Well, anyone who does some Biggleswade research should have known that, and that's on me. All right. Well, you got anything else for our listeners before we log off?
No, can't think of anything.
Well, in that note, then, bye. Wait, we don't have Jeff here to make some sort of ridiculous statement.